Hey, Chris, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Billy. How you doing?
Good. Here I am.
Excited to see you. What can we expect from a Billy Bragg show?
Well, I think we're going to try and make sense of the way the world is.
Right.
And given the events of the last couple of weeks, anything could happen between now and next Wednesday, couldn't it?
Yeah, I wanted to ask your opinion about that. And your country's in a bit of a transition right now. And what are your thoughts? Because, on this side of the pond, things are rosy and beautiful and she was so fantastic and had a great life and did great things. Is all of that true, or is there maybe more to that story that we're not seeing?
It is true to the extent that she did have an amazing life and she did represent to a lot of people a very special place in our culture.
Yeah.
I think in part because of her experience in the Second World War, she represented that generation. And they're my parents' generation. Like her, my parents were born in the 1920s. And when we buried her on Monday, we kind of buried my parents' generation. So
Yeah.
there's that feeling, she was the last representative of those people in our culture and our
Yeah.
society. They're gone now. So on one side, I mourn that, and I respect her as well and what she did in the role. But on the other side, there's the whole question of what is the role of a monarchy in a modern democracy,
Right.
and how do we deal with the changes that have happened since 1952? I mean, 70 years is a very, very long time. So, what does it mean to have a new monarch? None of us who live in the UK or Canada or Australia or Jamaica, all those other places in the Caribbean and in the Pacific where the Queen is head of state. Very few of us anyway, we very few of us have woken up one morning to find a different profile on our
Right.
coins.
Right.
And what has changed since 1952 is I think people now are more liable to think, how do I feel about this?
Yeah.
Whereas in 52, everyone was like, okay, this is what happens. And I think particularly in Britain, in so soon after the war, people found that in some way comforting. But now people are more likely to think, this
Right.
is because you can't really criticize the Queen. She's always been there. She's like the weather. You don't wake up and suddenly. But when you actually have a new face on your coins, I mean, how are the Canadians going to feel about that? How are the,
Right.
you know, the Jamaicans are already making some noises. The Australians have a minister for the Republic, the new Labour administration there, before the Queen died, had already instigated a minister for the Republic. So I think what happens in Canada and Australia and in the Caribbean is going to be important because it's going to affect how we see ourselves and how we think of our monarchy. I was
Right.
listening to a debate on the radio last night, and they talked as if it's just going to be a matter for us, we
Yeah.
Brits, to think about. But it's not, because she's the head of state of 14 other countries,
Right.
they all have a say as well. And I can't imagine Jamaica becoming a republic and it not affecting the way we think about how we feel about King Charles III, especially if Canada and Australia and New Zealand follow suit. It'll be up for debate in a way it hasn't been
Right.
before. But I will say this, I think your previous president has probably damaged the argument for republicanism in my country.
Yeah.
Never been down for a very long time. So in some ways, Trump is the monarchist friend in that sense, because I'd spoke speaking to a Canadian friend and said, yeah, it's all very well getting rid of the Queen as head of state, but you see what the Americans did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I
Yeah.
know what you're saying. So interesting times,
Yeah.
interesting times. And that may, that may float through. I may find a moment in the set to talk a little bit, reflect a little bit about that.
Sure.
But there's lots of other things going on that I'm trying to speak about, not least how we survive through the pandemic.
Yeah,
I think
let's talk
that's
about that because you actually produced your new album during the pandemic. You had and went through a couple phases of the lockdown that really interrupted that process, right?
it did, yeah. I mean, I kind of like went into the lockdown by losing a load of gigs, and although I had planned to make an album in 2020, or maybe 2021, I had planned to try out songs in sound checks. That's normally how I work.
Yeah.
But the loss of all the touring left me in a weird situation. Initially, I sort of filled it up by doing online stuff, but that kind of didn't really hit the spot for me. And the second lockdown, I thought to myself, I really need to focus on something here. So let's see if I can make an album. And I booked some studio time. I found a couple of producers I wanted to work with, Romeo Stoddart from the Magic Numbers and David Zumi, who has a studio down in Eastbourne. And booked the time, and then when the time came, we were back in lockdown again. So I did something I've never done before, which is I kind of sent them the demos and left it to them to put the backing tracks together, which was kind of sort of what I wanted, because I hired them because they're really good arrangers. I admire the arrangements they do on their records. So I kind of wanted that. But normally I would sit at the back of the studio in the big sort of evil villain chair and raise an eyebrow if they put too much Mellotron on a track, you know. So not being there.
Yeah. Did it make the album sound dramatically different from your previous work because you had done it that way?
I wanted it to. I'll be honest with you. I wanted it to sound a bit different. You know, the last album I made in the studio with Joe Henry, Two for Now, that was very organic. We were in his basement. I taught the musicians the songs. We played the songs. And I think it worked really well doing it that way. We did it in 5 days. I mean, it was an amazing experience. But this time I wanted to spend a little more thought on the arrangements of the songs. And I was looking for something that would reflect where we were in the pandemic rather than directly address it.
Yeah.
And Dave Izumi has an original Mellotron in his studio. And when I went down to look at the studio, I said, "Is that a Mellotron?" He said, "No one lets me use it." I said, "Oh, that's a shame." And I said to him, "Well, the woozy sound of the Mellotron kind of, to me, said something about the kind of foggy sensibility that we got during lockdown, where we didn't know what was going to happen, what was coming, or where we were." So I said, "Well, you know, put some on the tracks, Dave. Use a bit on the track, see how it works." And I thought it did work. You know, obviously it was a bit weird getting the tracks coming through, but after I had a time to listen to them a bit, and my partner gave me a talking to, I managed to kind of get my head around it and go with the flow.
Yeah, and you've got your son playing with you on a couple of songs, right?
Yeah, he heard, I played him some of the stuff at Christmas of, I suppose it must have been 2020. And one of the tracks he really liked, 10 Mysterious Photos That Can't Be Explained, but he was adamant that that line should be the chorus. And we had he's a songwriter as well. He's a singer-songwriter. And we had a bit of a argument about it. So eventually I said, "Look, here's my guitar, take it away, here's the lyrics. Play, you know, work it out, come back and play it to me how you think it ought to sound so I can hear what you're talking about." And he came back and did it, and annoyingly, it was really good. So that's kind of how I ended up.
Why is that annoying? That's a proud dad moment, right? Come on.
It is a proud dad. It is. But I should have seen that, really. I should be good enough to have spotted that. But yeah, I was really pleased about it. So consequently, he came down to the studio because he lived in Brighton. He's just up the road from Eastbourne. He came to the studio. He played on a few more tracks as well. We got involved. He sang a bit on the record. And we had a real... it's a great experience because previously, I mean, I think the last time when I made the record with Joe Henry in 2013, he's probably still at college, I think.
Yeah.
And the album before that, he was still at school. So, I've never made an album while he was A, an adult, and B, a working singer-songwriter. So it's nice that we should come together now in this situation.
Yeah, that's got to be a really special moment to watch your son play music that you wrote. The whole piece of that must be just this moment of like, wow, this is kind of a full circle, cool moment right there.
I can't tell you how much his mum loved it as well to see the two of us working together like that. So it was pretty good.
Yeah. Again, you're going to be at the Carolina Theater in Durham. That's Wednesday night, September 28th. People can get tickets at carolinatheater.org for tickets.
Yeah, it should be good, Chris. I'm looking forward to it, mate. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. Thanks.